Ah, pregnancy. A time of such joy for some, such admiration for your body and excitement for what parenting will bring. But also for some, crippling anxiety, weird aches, pains and cravings, and the prospect that you actually have to give birth to this baby at some point. Pregnancy can be a really strange period of your life and can feel so different for so many people. Season 2 of Bun in the Oven is here to help you navigate this bonkers time, alongside me, Holly Grant, whilst I also navigate this bonkers time during my current second pregnancy. In this season of the podcast, I'm joined by experts in all areas of maternal and perinatal health in real time throughout this pregnancy to cover topics that mean you don't have to spend hours on Google down a rabbit hole with no real evidence-based answer at the end of it all. I've worked with thousands of women over the last 11 years, and specifically since launching the Bump Plan in 2020. I have heard everything and admitted everything, so don't worry, we cover the embarrassing, gross stuff that you're not sure you want to ask your best friend. See, this is the information you wish you knew before you even knew you needed it. I can't wait for you to join me on this journey as we work out what on earth we're doing together. Enjoy season 2. Welcome to the very first episode of Season 2 of Bun in the Oven podcast. I'm so excited to start this new journey with you as I share my experience, warts and all, of my current pregnancy. I'm currently 10 weeks pregnant and have just left that weird pre-booking appointment limbo where you're 99% sure you're pregnant but you haven't yet seen a health professional to confirm everything. I must have taken 1,000 pregnancy tests to keep checking I was still expecting, and despite recognising awful morning sickness from my first pregnancy, there was always a slight element of not wanting to get my hopes up. Now for many women, those first 8 to 12 weeks of pregnancy with no direct access to a midwife can be a daunting time, especially if they've suffered a previous loss. It can feel like such a long time to wait until that initial booking appointment, which I've just had, and you might have so many questions you want to ask a health professional before then. That's where today's episode comes in. In this episode, I'm talking to the wonderful and super knowledgeable Pip Morrish. Pip is an experienced, practicing midwifery sister, MSc graduate, founder of Midwife Pip Podcast, hypnobirth and antenatal educator, co-author of published research, and importantly, a mum. In this episode, Pip and I dive into the feelings, concerns, highs and lows of those first few weeks. We talk about when it's time to call your GP to book an initial appointment, what happens in your booking appointment, what to expect from your first trimester, and how to manage any anxiety in that time. Pip also simplifies what foods to avoid, what supplements are important, and why staying active in that first trimester is so powerful. This is a really helpful episode for anyone who has yet to meet their midwife and wants some professional support and reassurance before then. Pip is such a wonderful guest, and personally, she is on a mission to ensure all expectant and new mums feel like superwomen during pregnancy and when they give birth. I hope you find this episode helps you feel confident and positive ahead of one of the best and most thrilling journeys of your life. And now, ahead of this episode, a few words from our sponsor. Given the theme of this podcast, I imagine that some of you are currently pregnant or planning a family. So many women I know just aren't sure how to move their body safely during this changing time, or they want to stay active but need someone to show them the way and hold their hand. That's where the Bump Plan Pregnancy comes in. The Bump Plan Pregnancy is a holistic prenatal fitness plan that allows you to work out with confidence at each trimester of your pregnancy. Founded by myself, Holly Grant, the Bump Plan Pregnancy has already helped over 25,000 pregnant women stay active safely and feel empowered throughout their pregnancies. Through its trimester-specific workouts, in which I'm always at the same stage of my pregnancy as you will be in yours, extensive education hub, discount hub, and growing Facebook community, you'll feel supported and part of a welcome community. Let me help you move safely through your pregnancy, maintain your fitness and strength, and enter parenthood strong and prepared for all the demands it poses. As a listener of Bun in the Oven, I'm offering you 20% per month off the cost of your monthly subscription to the Bump Plan, simply by entering the code BUN20 at checkout. To get started today, simply head to pilatespt.co.uk/the-bump-plan and enter the code BUN20 at checkout. That's BUN20 in lowercase to get 20% off the monthly cost of the Bump Plan pregnancy. Join our community today and enter labour and motherhood strong, capable and prepared with the Bump Plan. Hi Pip, thank you so much for being on the podcast.
Oh, thanks for having me, Holly. I'm very excited to chat. You know, I'm just excited as well to like escape mum life for a few minutes and just chat with like another adult. It's delightful, so yeah, thanks.
Well, let's start with some real talk as well, because I'm sure other people listening to this will also be parents, but we are recording this at 7 p.m. Well, it's gone past 7 p.m. because you have a 9-month-old, Finley, so you needed to do bedtime first. We're doing this on a Tuesday because it's the day that I have off, the one day a week I have off with Freya. And in my mind, I thought, you know what, I'll have had the day off, I won't have been working all day, so I'll have loads of energy to do work. But actually, in all honesty, a day of work is less tiring than a day with a toddler. So that's that. So we're doing it on a Tuesday night. And literally, I'm doing the typical podcast kind of Zoom meeting situation where I've got like a top on, but down below, I've got pajamas. I don't even have any knickers on right now. So there we go. Just in case anyone thinks we've got it all sorted. Definitely not.
We are winging it. But at least you made an effort from top up. I haven't even done that. I'm still in like probably a 6-day mum jumper.
Do you have knickers on though? You're winning.
I'm fully underwear.
And you've got your baby monitor there as well.
Yeah, Finley is asleep. Win.
Yes. Long may it last. Okay. Well, today we're going to be talking, really this is going to be kind of the first touch point for people who have found out that they're pregnant, and maybe they've known for a really long time, actually. I mean, you know, 3, 4, 5 weeks can feel like forever at the beginning. So maybe they've known for quite a while that they are pregnant, but obviously you don't really get much of a touch point with a midwife or a doctor until you may have known for a long time that you're pregnant. And then obviously then there's things like thinking about, you know, when do I even tell the doctor or the midwife that I'm pregnant? Then what happens? So really today we're going to be kind of getting as much information from you as a midwife about, you know, those first few weeks, and then when do we even start actually making things official? So really excited to kind of pick your brains. So let's start at the beginning then. So we found out really early on, because we were trying to get pregnant, that I was pregnant. Maybe some people find out much later, or, you know, weren't necessarily trying. But let's say someone does find out quite early on. Any advice for them? Because I took a million pregnancy tests to keep checking in that I was still pregnant. And I'd imagine that's even stronger if anyone's had a previous loss.
Oh gosh, Holly, you're so right. And I always think that the first trimester is arguably the hardest, but also probably actually quite a lonely time. I know I certainly felt that in my first trimester with Finley, because we seem to have this societal norm where it's all a little bit shrouded in secrecy, yet it is those weeks where, like you say, you don't have regular contact with a healthcare professional. You kind of have no one to turn to. And for most women, you feel absolutely ghastly. Like, you've got all these awful symptoms and you're there, like, putting your lipstick and a brave face on and pretending that you feel great, when actually all you want to do is like curl up in bed. So I think it's a really, really difficult time. And for that reason, I always say to women, like, of course, there is no right or wrong way or time to announce your pregnancy. But I always say, try and tell a little tribe. So those people that are going to be there for you to support you through those days when you're just throwing up out the car window, or that can, if you know, like you, Holly, if you've got a little toddler that can help you with a little bit of childcare so you can have a little bit of rest. And then if the worst happens and actually your pregnancy does end in loss, especially if that's happened to you before, they're going to be the people that rally around you. And I think it's quite difficult for them to support you through that grief sometimes if they haven't had that news with you, because it's kind of the shock of, oh gosh, you're pregnant and I didn't know, and now I'm supporting you through the grief. And it's kind of difficult to almost catch up to where you're at that point. Whereas if you've had that discussion already, then kind of join you where you are and kind of jump in that grief tunnel with you and support you through it. So I think we need to, I guess, change the tide, change the conversation around first trimester, and try and stop, if we can, being quite so secretive. If that feels right for you, obviously everyone's situation is so unique, isn't it? But I think that's the first thing I would suggest in that first trimester, because it's so tough. My gosh, I remember it well.
I really agree. And I think that it's partly as well because you tend to find that you announce your pregnancy with the scan photo, but we know that that scan is so far down the line for lots of people. And we kind of went through the same thing, you know, when with Freya, we didn't tell anybody till we'd had the scan and we did the usual showing the photo. But second time round, it was Freya's birthday and I think I was maybe 5 weeks pregnant or something, and all our family were there, and our family don't live anywhere near us, and all our family were there, and we were kind of like, you know what, whilst they're all here, should we just tell them? And we were both really nervous. Mm-hmm. And then obviously we've also announced it pre 12 weeks through social media and things, you know, because of the bump plan. And I just kind of felt like I owed it to people because I'm often the first person that finds out that they're pregnant. So I felt like, well, I should be really honest. But again, I felt really nervous, like I was doing something really naughty, admitting before that 12-week mark that I was pregnant just in case. And you're right, if the worst happened, you would then probably tell your best friends or your family and they have that double barrel of, oh, you were pregnant, oh, and you're not anymore. So yeah, I totally agree. And actually, it was a really pleasant thing to tell people because then I could just be really honest that I felt rubbish. And with clients, I could be like, I'm really sorry if I'm sick during the class, you know, and people are able to better support you.
Yeah, and it takes sometimes someone like yourself where you've got a profile to talk about it, and then it kind of tricks people's ears, doesn't it? It makes them think, oh, actually, maybe I'll do that. Maybe that's what I should do. And I always think when we have this secrecy, I always think, who are we protecting? Because I'm sure it's probably not actually ourselves that we're trying to protect. Because if we do tell someone that we've lost that pregnancy, we've had a miscarriage, it's really them, I think, that we're trying to protect, which if you told them that, they'd be like, oh my goodness, make me so ridiculous. Like, I want to support you. But it's just that complete lack of communication that I think means that we're just not running parallel, are we? So yeah, really think about and have a conversation with your other half or those around you about pregnancy, how you're feeling, what you're going to do, how you're going to make sure there's that army of support to navigate those bumps and roller coasters that come in that first trimester. My goodness.
It's tough. That first trimester is absolutely minging. Yeah, it's just not nice. And so, yeah, I think being able to share that with other people and people being able to check in with you is really, really helpful. Mm-hmm. Great advice.
And then you have this like lack of anything, don't you? You know, you take your pregnancy test, you've got these two blue lines and you have this like euphoric moment if you have been planning a pregnancy. And then it's like, well, now what on earth do I do? Like, maybe I've told my mum, but I need to book a scan. Like, how do I navigate all that? And again, I think it's one of those things, like you said at the beginning, Holly, that the weeks may not feel to somebody else on the outside very long, like 12 weeks, but actually to you, every week feels like a month, isn't it? Like, especially when you're even struggling to get out of bed in the morning with fatigue and things. So those weeks really do feel long. And it's, I think, such a shame that there isn't more involvement from the NHS and maternity services. And it's something I'm actually really passionate about, Holly, because my first trimester was disgusting. Like, I really, really did struggle with every symptom. And like you say, I was struggling as a midwife. I was like, this is awful, there's no support, where's the information? I'm like, gosh, if I felt like that as a midwife, how do other women feel that don't have that knowledge and understanding about their body? And I created a course actually that's meant to be started in your first trimester for that reason, because I said, there just isn't this pregnancy support in this precious time. And like the work that you do, Holly, we know how protecting your well-being in pregnancy in those early weeks has such a massive impact, not just on your pregnancy health and your postnatal recovery, but also on your baby's health. So it's a real time for us, I think, to just take a check-in with ourselves and our bodies and really start thinking about those things that make us feel good and ensuring that they become a priority. It really is a time of kind of self-reflection. How am I going to support my own well-being? I think pregnancy can be powerful in kind of changing our mindset with things like that, and that good old self-care that we all need a little bit more of.
Yeah, and we know there's a huge drop off with women and physical activity in that first trimester, because again, until they have a touch point with healthcare professional, they might not have all the facts about staying active during pregnancy. And I've heard so many myths over the years, and so many women who come to me and say, like, I was told to don't do any running in the first trimester, don't do this, don't do that. And so they get to a point where they're just like, I'm just actually going to do nothing because I'm really nervous that I might cause miscarriage. And actually, we know that there is no link between physical activity and miscarriage. So that's kind of the first thing to say. But yes, it's a real shame, and it's completely understandable that women are are nervous in that first trimester because they have no healthcare professional to talk to.
Yeah, nothing. And you're literally scared of everything. You're scared of what you're breathing in, you know, the car fumes, what you're eating, what you shouldn't eat, how you can move your body. Should I run? Should I not? It's just, oh, it's a nightmare, isn't it? And like, should I get my hair coloured? Can I get my nails done? It's literally every aspect of your life that you start second guessing. So what I would say to anyone listening who is in that moment now and is thinking, oh my goodness, can I do this? Can't I do that? Actually, there isn't a lot you can't do, especially in that first trimester. There really isn't. There's those obvious bits of advice that hopefully you can find on sort of NHS websites and things about what you shouldn't eat. But there isn't a lot. And even things like soft cheeses now, as long as they're cooked, you're all good. It's largely kind of sensible things. And I always say as well, our bodies are super clever, right? They're literally growing a whole nother human life. So we can listen to them and our bodies will tell us if something doesn't feel good. You know, if you're doing a certain movement and actually that's not feeling great for you that day, you know to scale back. But having kind of blanket rules of, you know, don't do this movement or don't run or don't, you know, swim or don't get your heart rate above a certain number is just so unhelpful. And I think Holly actually probably causes more harm than good, because all it does is makes us really anxious. And the more anxious we get and the more cortisol we have, that passes to our developing babies. So actually, if doing yoga, doing Pilates, going for a run, going swimming, lifting weights, if that feels good to you, then do it, because actually the benefits are going to be massive. So yeah, and I love that. Such an important myth to bust is that exercise does not cause miscarriage. So you don't need to be afraid of moving your body in any way that feels good. And actually the first trimester, I know this will be something you're super passionate about, is a really important time actually to think about strengthening your body, because there's movements that you can safely do in the first trimester that actually are going to be more challenging when you move into the second and third. So if you can get your body in the best physical state in the first, my goodness, you're going to have a much more comfortable pregnancy.
It's so true. Core work, you know, It's not that you can't do core work second, third trimester. It's just, it becomes logistically really tricky because you've got a huge bump in the way. So yeah, I completely agree. If you haven't had chance to maybe kind of get as strong and fit as you wanted to pre-pregnancy, well, in that first trimester, once you know you're pregnant, you know, it's a really good time. Just thinking as well with what you were saying about kind of like, you know, what foods you can't eat and you're so cautious. I think there's also, and I hope anyone listening to this who is also pregnant with second, third, fourth child, I think there's a bit of a difference between the first pregnancy and second or third. In so much that the first time I found out with Freya, I was in France and I remember going to a restaurant and all of the items on the menu were salads, but they had like foie gras, cured meats, soft cheeses. And I said to the waitress, I'm really, really sorry, but I'm actually pregnant. And she just kind of looked at me like, and I said, do you have anything that doesn't have like raw cheese or raw meat? And she was just like, no. So I ended up basically just having like a salad with nothing on it. And so first time around, I was really cautious. And then I kind of feel, and I really hope that everyone else is the same, that like second, third time round, you're kind of a bit more relaxed, you know, you're a bit, I booked to get my eyebrows tinted today. And then they called me and said, we're really sorry, we can't do it because you're pregnant. I was like, oh, come on. And they said, oh, it's just because of the brand that we use. But I feel like, yeah, the first time round, you know, you are so nervous to do anything wrong. And then maybe second, third time, you're kind of like, you know what, I know that actually I'd have to be doing something really wrong.
And I think that probably, your eyebrows look great, by the way, anyway, Holly. So
they're drawn on though, but they're orange. But yeah, I know, I was livid. Come on.
I think that comes with confidence, doesn't it? It comes with confidence of knowing the process, of knowing your body, of understanding what's to expect, what's happening, what you can expect. Whereas the first time, it is all completely new and completely overwhelming. And you've probably also got more time to research, whereas with your second, you are way too busy with the toddler. So it's like, they're essentials. So I think that probably does come with confidence. And I'm sure, Holly, you'll probably feel the same when this baby's here, is that all of those things that you worried about with Freya, this time those worries will just be half, because you're like, oh, I did this last time, it worked for us. You know, I think,
hopefully.
But I think that's probably a common theme with us as women. For some reason, I have no idea why, because we're bloody awesome, but we doubt ourselves until we've proved ourselves otherwise. Rather than being like, we're incredible, our bodies are amazing, we're going to boss this, we doubt that there's something's going to go wrong or there's going to be a problem or we can't do it until we prove that we can. And I think as women, we owe it to each other to change that dynamic, because we really are quite incredible, I think.
I think it's just a lot of pressure as well, isn't it? Especially when your partner can't really share this initial burden. You know, it's all on you. You're so nervous that you might do something wrong and that would impact on your partner if you have one as well. So it's a huge responsibility, but I'm grateful that it's us that get to do it.
Gosh, so yeah. I think the world would be a smaller place if it wasn't.
Oh my God, my husband would be a nightmare. It'd be a nightmare. Anyway, so we're saying, yeah, so it's a really long wait, really anxious. Mm. So then when do we actually need to start thinking about calling someone and who do we call?
Yeah, perfect. So once you've got those two blue lines, or the fancy ones now just say like pregnant, don't they? So as soon as you've done that, you can usually self-refer to the maternity service. Now, some areas are a little bit behind the times and you need to phone your GP first and then they refer you. But most places now, you can directly get onto Google, type in your local hospital and self-refer into their community service. And then once you've had that sort of initial conversation, usually that will be with a reception member of staff. They'll then book you in for this, what we call the booking appointment, which I always feel sorry for women because we get really excited about this first midwife appointment. And in reality, it's a little bit dull. Have you had your booking appointment yet, Holly?
Yeah, just had it. And I was just really surprised how long it was and how many questions there were.
It's a lot of questions. And that's basically what it is. So essentially, your midwife is trying to get your whole history. So both yours, some of your family, your partner's medical and obstetric history when you've had a baby before. And we're kind of looking for anything that is not completely straightforward. So any little sort of health complications or anything that might mean that we need to make some extra referrals to other services. And that could be an obstetrician. So the obstetricians are our specialist labour and birth doctors. If there's perhaps some extra monitoring needed in your pregnancy, or perhaps some complication around birth and some extra planning we need to put into place. Or it might be to other services. So it might be if there's like a bleeding disorder, it might be haematology, there's a cardiac thing, it'll be the cardiac team. So it could be all kind of different people. Because what we know is that pregnancy does put a big strain on your body. So if there is any kind of little underlying conditions, we need to make sure they're managed appropriately for you and your baby. So we'll get kind of everyone on board that we need to make sure that we look after you. And you'll often have some other little screening tests done at that point. So things like checking your urine for any urine infections. And that's actually really important. And I think it becomes a bit of a joke, doesn't it? When you go to a midwife appointment, it's like, oh, can you pee in this pot? And the more pregnant you get, the more difficult it gets to pee in this blooming pot. But actually, that first one's really important because urinary tract infections can cause preterm birth or miscarriage. So we want to screen for those. And if we did notice one, we could get you treated on some antibiotics at that point. We also want to check your blood pressure, make sure that that's all normal, because again, blood pressure can cause complications in pregnancy. And often as well, you'll be offered to have your BMI checked. And I know discussing weight, especially in pregnancy, is a really difficult and a really sensitive thing. The reason we would offer that is we do know that women with a raised BMI, and I totally am on board with BMI being a really crude measurement, but it's kind of the best we've got for the general population. But we do know that having a raised BMI can lead to some pregnancy complications. So things like hypertension, raised blood pressure, issues with the function of your placenta, etc. So it's just about screening you and then seeing, do you need any extra appointments? Do you need any extra scans? And booking those in. So it is very much, almost feels like you're at school at that appointment. It's a bit of a yes, no, well, 3 years ago I had this done, and it's a little bit tedious, which is why I always feel a little bit sorry when women are like, I've got my first midwife appointment, it's really exciting, and then they're like, oh. And I think, I don't know how you felt, Holly, but often it doesn't feel like that appointment gives you much of a voice. It's kind of a lot of asking you questions, and it's like, oh, I had this long list of questions I was kind of hoping we'd go over. And that's where the NHS, I think, and the time pressures do fall short, really, for women.
Yeah, I agree. I think you're right. It's kind of go in there expecting it to be like a bit boring. You know, yeah. You're literally sat there for quite a long time. I think I was in there for nearly an hour.
Yeah, it can be about an hour, yeah.
Yeah, it's like any history of so-and-so in your family, yes or no? You know, have you had this? Do you like this? Have you thought about this? And so, yeah, it's just lots and lots and lots of questions. But all really important. And like you said, it's kind of almost like searching for any red flags. And at the end, I managed to quickly ask a question. And actually, I did, you know, it was also really handy because they asked questions like, have you been taking folic acid? And I was finding it really difficult to take vitamins in the morning, so I was bringing them straight back up. But one thing we'd realized is that the folic acid I was taking was not like a pregnancy one. It was from like a general vitamin company. And it was folic acid and vitamin... vitamin B, is it, that you're not supposed to have during pregnancy?
Or vitamin, it might be vitamin A.
Vitamin A. Mm. And so luckily, and she'd said like, oh, no, you shouldn't be taking that. So then we ordered some more folic acid. It's just small things like that. You know, I'd have carried on taking that the whole way through. And I think that's why it's so important that you do finally get that touch point, because there's small things like that that can easily be missed. So yeah, and I had, you know, some questions at the end about like, how do I manage morning sickness, things like that. But yeah, it's mainly them just talking at you and getting you to do things.
Oh, it is, isn't it? When I had Finley, we were still very like COVID times. So it was virtual. So it was on the telephone, which actually was quite nice in a way, because it meant at least I could sit comfortably on my sofa while I was being sick and have this hour-long appointment. But I'm really pleased we have gone back to face-to-face, because like you say, that folic acid and vitamin A wouldn't have come up. And folic acid is really important, actually. Do you mind if I just touch on that, Holly?
Go on it. Yeah, go for it.
Yeah, so for anyone listening, especially in that first 12 weeks, if you're planning a pregnancy, this is a great time to start taking it. If you're already pregnant and you haven't been, please, please do start. Folic acid is brilliant because it helps to reduce the risk of neurotube defects in babies. So that's things like spina bifida. And what we do know is that in the UK, we've actually got one of the highest rates of neural tube defects. Despite having access to loads of beautiful food, we just can't get enough of it through our diet. It is in things like leafy greens, but it's really hard to get an adequate amount in your diet for pregnancy. So it's kind of a blanket rule, really, that we recommend taking folic acid. And it may be if you have got a raised body mass index or a strong family history of neural tube defects, at that booking appointment, your midwife may suggest actually you take a higher dose as well. So again, it's these conversations that are really important. And vitamin D, we should all be supplementing with vitamin D as well throughout pregnancy and breastfeeding. And actually, just being a human in England in the winter, we should be taking vitamin D too. Yeah, that's my midwife lecture on supplements.
Not enough sunlight in this country. Yeah, no, really, really helpful. And it can be so difficult, you know, when you are feeling sick and nauseous, but even if it's just that one little folic acid and all the others you just park for now, then that's definitely the most important one. Mm. Other things that can happen at booking points, blood tests.
Yes.
Many people are a fan, but I'm really not a fan. So just a heads up that they'll take your blood, right?
Yeah, they will take your blood. And we test for, again, all of these tests that I've spoken about, so your urine, your blood pressure, your BMI, your blood tests, are all, of course, optional. You don't have to have any of these things. It's entirely up to you, but they are all really recommended. So the blood test we take at booking, it's just one needle, but we do take quite a few bottles. And that's because we like to screen for all sorts of infectious diseases. Now, that includes things like syphilis, HIV. We like to often check your rubella immunity. And then we also like to check your blood group. Now, for those that may have a rhesus negative blood group, you'll be offered some additional injections in pregnancy. So we really want to screen for that and see whether that's an appropriate care pathway for you. We also like to check your hemoglobin level. So that's your iron level. And also look at your clotting factors in your blood as well. So again, it's just that whole kind of screening, what's going on, and making sure we give you the appropriate care pathway to really optimise that health of your pregnancy and minimise complications at the end of the day.
Yeah, really helpful. And first time around with Freya, I'm pretty sure that I called the midwife like as soon as I realised I was pregnant. Second time round, I was kind of farting around, you know, and like, oh yeah, I must remember to ring, and did it much later. At what week should people be calling up?
So we like the booking appointment to be around weeks 8 to 10. Yeah. So ideally you've made your phone call kind of a few weeks before then if you can.
Yeah.
But you can't do it too early. So if you found out you're pregnant and you can make the appointment straight away, that's absolutely fine. And of course, there's always those that didn't quite realise they were pregnant and then they're like 14 weeks. And you know, we can only do the best we can, but we try and have that booking appointment around that 8 to 10 week mark, because it allows us to make those referrals. And that appointment is when your midwife will then kind of forward off the paperwork to officially book that 12-week scan for you as well, which is what everyone is really waiting for in the first trimester, I think.
Great. So that answers the next question. So booking the scan, at least in England, the midwife would then do that, triggered by that booking appointment.
Yeah, so you don't have to, as far as I'm aware, in hospitals in England, you don't have to phone and book that scan yourself. That's usually triggered by your midwife.
Great. I know it will potentially vary from area to area, and also there might still be kind of like a still overhang slightly because of COVID. But can you bring somebody with you to that booking appointment?
Yes, yeah, so usually you can. I mean, again, COVID rules everywhere. Who knows what's going on at the moment in your local unit, but generally it's absolutely fine. It actually can be quite helpful, especially if your partner has got a significant medical history. Sometimes it's easier for them to explain it than for you to explain it. And it's just really nice. Partners want to be involved, and it's lovely for them to come along to appointments. So absolutely, in normal times away from COVID, it's absolutely acceptable and really nice if someone can come with you.
And if you know the partner and they can be there, there are questions about the partner's medical history that would be helpful if you knew it.
Yeah, absolutely. So things like whether they might carry, for example, a sickle cell trait, what else can I think of? If they've got like a cardiac history or epilepsy, diabetes, all things like this that can have an impact on you and your baby and your pregnancy, because of course it's half their genetics. So whatever's going on in their body has an impact on little one.
Yeah. And we took Freya just because it was actually my husband's birthday for our booking appointment. So we like booked dinner and stuff. So we had Freya with us and we took her. And whilst it wasn't terrible, we managed to like show her photos on our phone and stuff. I would say, because it is quite a long appointment, if you can get childcare, I would recommend it because, yeah, she was bored by the end.
I mean, it's not the best thing for us as adults. Yeah. So for a toddler, it's really not fun. And it's not like the rooms aren't set up, you know, GP surgeries like 5 years ago, there was toys and books and it was really great fun. Whereas COVID's meant that unless we can anti-vax spray every ounce of everything, that's just like bare minimum. So for a toddler, it is very, very dull.
It's dry times, yeah. So you've had your booking appointment, you're waiting for your date for your scan. And again, there is kind of, it does feel like a little bit of a wait, but it's usually only a couple of weeks, hopefully. So then anything else that, you know, any advice that you would have for people between that booking appointment and having that scan? I mean, the one that comes to mind, so I had some bleeding at work and, you know, wasn't sure like whether I should call a midwife, is it normal, things like that. We kind of always say like maybe wearing things like white panty liners so that if there is anything, any changes, you know, you notice it, you can call the midwife straight away. Any immediate things that you can think of before that scan?
Yeah, of course. So bleeding's a common one, Holly, actually. And I always say any bleeding at any stage of pregnancy, we should never class as normal. So always, always get that checked out. Any bleeding at any stage, whether it's a large clot or a tiny little bit of spotting, always get that checked out. Really, really important. It's just always be safe, isn't it, with these babies and pregnancy. It's such a miraculous time. And I wish our abdomens were see-through. I really do, because it'd make everyone's life so much easier, but they're just not. So yeah, always, always be checked out. The other thing I would say is try not to compare and try not to hit Dr. Google, good old Dr. Google. Now, so often when I speak to women, they'll say, but I'm not feeling sick. Like, everyone's told me I'm going to feel really sick and really tired and I feel fine. So am I even pregnant? I'm going to do like 600 pregnancy tests and drive myself mad. Because you might get the odd false negative in that, that is completely a false negative. But then, oh my gosh, that throws you into like a whole anxiety whirlwind. So I would say try not to compare, because some women really do sail through the first trimester with not a single symptom. They wouldn't have even known they were pregnant, whereas others feel ghastly. And I think that goes with everything, pregnancy and motherhood, to be honest, is really try not to compare. I know it should be difficult because you're clinging on to, you know, your sister said she felt this way and you're not feeling that way, so something must be going wrong. So really try with that. And then I would say try to really start planning for how you're going to optimise your pregnancy. So thinking, like we said at the beginning, really about those ways to support your well-being, because it really can fly by before you've even noticed. And especially if it is your first, when they arrive, your whole world is literally turned upside down, isn't it, Holly? And it's beautiful and it's the most wonderful roller coaster. But those moments of self-care and those hours that you could have picked away just don't exist anymore. And certainly one of the things when I reflect back on my pregnancy, I really wish I'd prioritised that time that you had but didn't realise that you had at the time until it's gone. And then you're like, oh my gosh, I had so much free time where I could have done lovely things. And because that 9 months flies by in the grand scheme of life, that 9 months really is nothing. And your body is doing incredible work. In fact, the first 10 weeks of pregnancy, by the time you get to about 10 weeks, your baby is completely fully formed. All they really do for the rest of pregnancy is get bigger. So your body's doing this like beautiful, detailed, miraculous work in those early weeks. And it's no wonder, therefore, we feel so rough. But really trying to respect, I think, the process that your body's going through and support it. Because, yeah, I think so often we're like, oh, I'm just pregnant, so I'll get on with things. But it's like your body's just growing a whole other human life. You know, we need to really love it and worship ourselves a little bit, I think.
It's hard work, but for completely good reason. Mm. And I think going back to what you said, the first point about kind of not comparing, I think that's even more important for anyone who's kind of suffered a loss, because I think it's really easy to kind of be thinking, oh, you know, yeah, I haven't felt sick this time, I don't feel exhausted, but I know that other people do. And, you know, if I'm not having symptoms, am I still pregnant? I think that's just really, really common, something we hear a lot from our members. I think that every pregnancy is different, every person is different, but I can totally understand as well why it's easy to do if you've lost a baby before.
Oh gosh, yeah. I mean, first trimester of pregnancy is anxiety provoking time anyway. If you throw into that mix of previous loss, like that anxiety just and totally understandably so goes AWOL. And I think that's where having some coping mechanisms becomes really important. And those coping mechanisms will see you through pregnancy and through motherhood. And one of the ones that I was using, especially for the night feeds actually, that really helped, but has continued to help, is the take 5 breath. Have you heard of it, Holly?
No.
So it's very simple and you can do it with little ones as well. Like Freya would probably respond to it now. But basically you hold your hand out and then you trace with your, I've got to remember that you can't see me when you're listening. So you use your finger and you literally trace up your thumb, down your thumb, up your forefinger. But as you do that, as you go up the mountain, if you like, you inhale. And as you come down, you exhale. So it makes you take 5 lovely big deep breaths. And when things are getting a little bit tense and anxiety provoking, I'm like, in our house now, it's like, I'm just going to take 5 and then we just do that breath. And I think it's equally as effective for adults and children, to be honest. So having little tiny mechanisms that you can do absolutely anywhere like that, that'll just kind of help you with that mindset, I think is really important. And just sprung to mind when you talk about pregnancy tests, because this is a question I get all the time, a positive pregnancy test means you're pregnant. So if you've had a positive pregnancy test, it's not going to be a false positive. It means you are pregnant. You can get false negatives. So this is where the difficulty comes if you do a pregnancy test and then you continue to do pregnancy tests. And I know it's so tempting. I totally get it, especially if you've not had symptoms or you've had a previous loss. But really try to avoid it, because you'll drive yourself mad if you throw a false negative out there. A positive pregnancy test means you are pregnant.
Yeah, that's really, really good advice, Pip. Is there anything that you can think that we might have missed? I feel like we've covered everything.
Yeah, I feel like we have. I really feel for anyone going through, because the first trimester is just, it's just really tough. So yeah, please do reach out for help. And if you are finding the NHS isn't meeting your needs, perhaps, that really is why I developed my first trimester course, which is called Your Pregnancy Journey. And the idea is that you essentially have loads of support and guidance from the moment you have a positive pregnancy test. Because it's really blooming hard and there just isn't enough information out there to manage all those symptoms and to build a community as well. And that community and that tribe just becomes even more important, I think, as you move through pregnancy, motherhood, weaning, all that kind of stuff. Those friends become invaluable.
Yeah, I think it's really true. And that just reminded me something as well. And maybe it's not every partner, but I think that in that first trimester, there's almost a a presumption that because you're not that pregnant, you know, you're not showing yet necessarily, you know, you're only just early stages pregnancy, mm-hmm. that, you know, how hard can it be? And I think my partner both times has kind of struggled a little bit with how awful I have felt, even though it's very early stages. And actually sometimes I have to remind him that for me, the first trimester is definitely the hardest. Mm-hmm. You know, I felt worse in week 8 than I probably did at like week 41 with Freya. So I think it's just also being really comfortable to say, like, just because I'm only early stages, like, this is really the hardest part. And, you know, I might feel better further down the line. It's not the more pregnant you are, the harder it is. I honestly think that the first part is really, really the hardest part. So, yeah, feel free to let your partners know if they're like, oh, but like, are you really feeling that bad? Only 5 weeks? Like, yeah, I feel horrific.
Yeah, and my experience completely echoes yours, actually, Holly. I was blessed. The second and third trimesters were relatively a breeze as pregnancy goes. But yeah, first trimester is so debilitating. And again, I think that's where it comes to that communication, that being open and honest. And for women that are sat in their first trimester now, kind of vomiting or having awful heartburn or, you know, fatigue or can't eat a single vegetable. That was my thing. I opened the fridge and threw out every single vegetable because I couldn't even look at them. And knowing that actually for the vast majority of women, it does pass. You know, you get to kind of week 12 and it gets better gradually. And the reason for that actually is the shift in hormones. So we have this hormone called human chorionic gonadotropin releasing hormone, which we thankfully shorten to HCG. And that's the hormone that gives you that positive pregnancy test. That's what's being tested and what picks up on that. And that hormone, as much as it makes you feel rotten, essentially maintains your pregnancy for you. So it is really important we have those surging levels. And then as we develop a placenta, which is this like incredible life support machine organ that's going to supply your baby with everything they need through your pregnancy, that takes over maintaining the pregnancy. And so that hormone level starts to drop. And that's when you start to feel better, thankfully, for most women as you move into that second trimester. So knowing if you're sat in those awful symptoms now, the chances are it really will get better. And then for lots of women, they have this beautiful second trimester glow where they feel wonderful and their hair gets thicker and their nails get longer and everything's lovely, and then you develop a beautiful little bump. But yeah, it does usually get better. So hang on in there.
Hang in there. Yeah, just keep existing. Just, you know, get through it.
Yeah, be kind to yourself.
For most people, yeah, it will get better. Pip, that was really, really helpful. You've answered so many questions, so much great take-home advice. So thank you so, so much. I hope everyone listening has found that helpful. Enjoy your booking appointments. If you don't enjoy it, you're not alone there. It's pretty dull, but very important. And we're so lucky that we have midwives like you, Pip, as well. If all midwives were like you, it'd be fantastic, wouldn't it? Pip, thank you so much.
Oh, pleasure. Thanks for having me, Holly. I could talk about pregnancy all day, you know me. So thank you.
Oh, I know you could. I know you could. And well done, Finley, for staying asleep.
Good boy.
Oh, the sofa calls. So, Pip, thank you so much. And yeah, I'll speak to you again soon.
Take care. Bye.
Firstly, thank you so much for taking the time to listen to this episode of Bun in the Oven, and I hope you found it helpful. For more support, do head to the show notes below to find links and supplementary reading we feel may be helpful to you. Secondly, this podcast can only help those who know about it. If you enjoyed this episode, it would mean so much if you could subscribe to Bun in the Oven and give us a 5-star rating. While podcasts are easy to listen to, they take a lot of effort to create, and your support in sharing Bun in the Oven will help me encourage more guests to join me for future episodes. Thank you so much for listening today, and enjoy the rest of your day.